Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast, and thanks to our new title sponsor, Spire Academy Lacrosse. Spire is an international high school and post-grad sports performance training and education boarding school located within a world-class event and wellness complex.
We've got a really special guest this week on the Quintessential Podcast. We bring in Eric Wolf, live from New Jersey Institute of Technology. The Highlanders off to a 5-0 start and really one of the big storylines of February. First of all, Coach, congratulations. What's it been like?
Yeah, it's been exciting, I think, for the boys. For them, a group that's obviously struggled and had some challenges, I think, throughout their career to finally get over the hump in a lot of these close games has been just great for them. And I'm happy for them. I really feel like they do deserve it. They've worked really hard for a long amount of time. And, you know, any group that has struggled, for them to finally start to get over the hump and get some wins underneath their belt. And I'm just happy for them. And as much as for them as you know, their parents, have been riding through this thing, for a long time, and you never know what's at the end of the tunnel, but for them sticking it out and grinding it out and finding some success here in the early season, I've just been super happy for them.
I want to talk about the program. I want to talk about the team. And then I want to talk about your background. I want to start with NJIT. There's 76 teams that play Division I lacrosse, and it's kind of an amazing number now. And there's a lot of people who probably are not familiar with the Highlander program. Where's your school? What's your school like? Kind of give me a broad brush as to NJIT.
Yeah, so we're in Newark, New Jersey. We're about a 15 to 20 minute train ride into the city, or Hoboken, which is obviously a huge, calling card for, the institution. At our core, our reputation, we're known as a STEM school, right? Science, technology, engineering, and math. But over 50% of our team are actually business guys. So we have an eclectic mix of guys in terms of what they study. The school will tell you, and it is a huge selling point, within 6 months of graduation, you're going to have a job. Like, that is what we do at NJIT. So, in-state tuition for the Jersey kids, it's a pretty good deal. The out-of-state stuff, it's pretty, pretty competitive as well, in terms of the numbers. And I just always talk about bang for your buck. I mean, this institution is incredible. It will change lives. And obviously playing lacrosse at a high level is a pretty good deal too. But, we just have really self-motivated kids. This is, we're not a party school. I say that to recruits. Like, if you're looking to, for football games on Saturday, this is not the place for you. If you're looking to work really hard on the field, off the field, academically, and you're looking to get a job and to make some good money coming out of school, this is a great place for you. So, finding the kids that want what we got, I think, is a big part of the recruiting process. But it's a great bang for your buck.
So is your roster highly New Jersey?
Yeah, and it will always be that way with in-state tuition. So recruiting this state is a big part of what we do. We'll certainly bump heads as there's, plenty of competition. But I do think for people that want, this, that want NJIT, that want what we got, we're pretty unique. There aren't a lot of schools that offer what we offer. So we have to be smart about, the kids that we are recruiting. But I do think there is a big draw in terms of where jobs are now with the STEM field, and obviously with our access to, the city with the business side of things. Like, there's a lot for kids to like here.
When did you take over exactly?
So this is my second year. So last year was my first year, and this is my second year.
What'd you learn last year? This is a program that has struggled, 10 wins combined in the last 9 years. Suddenly you got half that total back in 1 year. What changed from year one to year two?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything overnight, Quint. I think it's an accumulation of a lot of things. And I've said this before, it's just, you got to get, when you take over an organization, which is kind of how I look at it, you got to get everybody rowing the boat in the same direction. So for me, it starts at the top with our athletic director, Lenny Kaplan, who's, like, to me, the biggest thing here is from an administrative level is continuity. Like, Lenny's been here a long time, and he's an old school Long Island guy, which is, how I identify myself as well. And then our sports administrator, Andrew Schwartz, runs the ins and outs of this building and this facility and the turf. And, Andrew is a pit bull in a great way in that, he holds everyone accountable, and this place is run really, really well. And I've been other places, whether it be, visiting other facilities or working in other facilities, where, sometimes you don't have as many people invested in that care as much about what's going on in the day to day. So I think for them, it really does start at the top. And then, you know, myself with continuity with my staff, with Shawnee Eccles, who played at a high level, you know, Jack Carney, who coached at Bryant, and is just a tough, gritty kid, having played at Post University at the Division II level, and then bringing, you know, Bobby Russo over, you know, who played for Coach Brecht for 5 years, you know, and I love Coach P, man, but you're going to learn how to work under Coach Brecht. Wow. So our staff continuity is, has been a really, I think it's just been really important for us. And then 19 seniors is the most important thing that we have. And that's a combination of seniors, super seniors, COVID seniors, couple of graduate guys that have fit in really well with us. So, and our parents group as well. I mean, they're all with it. Everybody is just with, I think from the day one, when we just started pushing our message about, you know, what we're trying to build here, everyone's with it and we're all rowing in the same direction. So I think it is an accumulation of all of those things. Nothing more important than, you know, the 19 seniors and the boys we got in the locker room.
Did you get a sense prior to this season that the team had elevated?
Yeah, I mean,
before your opener,
I knew on paper. I certainly didn't know when I took the job, you know, our talent level. I really didn't know. And then when I got here, I saw we had some skill and we had some ability, but you know, the confidence level and the identity piece was probably lacking a little bit. And you know, I'm not blaming anyone. Certainly not blaming the staff or the boys. It just kind of happened. You know, so to get the identity and get the confidence piece back on track last year, which we started to build, and then, you know, couple, you know, key transfer, you know, transfers coming in, and then our guys just working really hard for the last, you know, year and a half with us, and then all the 3 to 4 years of work that they've done over their careers, I knew we had the potential to make a big jump. But at the end of the day, it's just going to boil down to, are they willing to do the work? And are they going to get connected, which is the greatest challenge, as you know, in any team sport, is how much do they care about each other, you know, regardless of who's on the right or the left. So we had potential, you know, but I did feel good about the talent that we had in the room.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned connection, because connectivity nowadays with kids and their phones make it troublesome. I traveled with Georgetown this week from BWI out to Midway and then back. I saw him in the airport, but I was talking to their staff about back in the day, one bus with one music source and nobody on earphones, and just the level of connection that student athletes had with one another because they weren't distracted on their cell phones or they weren't putting their ear pods in. Is that something that you have to address in your locker room and when you travel, and how do you balance them maybe doing their homework on their iPad, but also knowing that when you're together, you want to be together?
Yeah, it's. I think it's the greatest challenge that we face today. You know, again, I got my watch on right here, right? I got my phone right here, and I find myself battling it too. It's an addiction, you know, to a point. So to get them to connect, yeah, it's something that we talk about all the time. We said it, I think, the last time we went out, I was stood in front of the group. I was like, boys, we get 5 dinners together throughout the rest of the year. Like, and that's just where our schedule is, right? Because we don't have a lot of overnight road trips. So it just doesn't happen that much. So, you know, when we go to dinner, I tell them to put their phones away. You know, when they're on the bus, I don't have a rule about whether they can use their phones or not, but we talk about just being present, being in the moment. And we got spring break coming up, which is a great time, but we also put things into practice. Like before practice, we do a player's address. You know, when I speak, the boys listen, but when the players speak, they really listen. So a different guy will speak to the team every day. And then at the end of practice, last year we did, which I got from, we called the 4-H's, got it from, I think it was Shaka Smart with VCU, and then the Browns took it in the playoffs a couple of years ago, which is where every guy will get up in front of the team, talk about his history, his heroes, his hopes, and his heartbreaks, which I think kind of spread through lacrosse, which was really cool to see. And then we kind of built in another one this year. We called it the 4 W's. What's misunderstood about you? What pisses you off? What's your why? And the fourth one is honestly escaping me right now. But
it sounds like you do a lot of readership, reading of leadership books, like PJ Fleck, RTB, Row the Boat. You know, John Gordon wrote a book about that. Shaka and his. So you're. It sounds like you're searching out good leadership models to incorporate and to get your athletes to open up and to become a team.
I'm certainly, you know, I try and educate myself. I try and you try and improve, you try and get better. Most of that stuff I'll do, like for me, I call books on tape. Like I do podcasts, I do books on tape. You know, my wife gives me guff every month because I spend $15 a month on Audible reading books. But I'm like, this is important to me, just to improve and get better. Now, I do think it's important to, like, you don't want to read a book and then install like a book.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that could be a mistake. And I honestly, I don't do much reading in season because I don't want to alter my mind about like where I'm at. I do a lot of it more so in December, you know, the IMLCA coaches convention. I educate myself and I try and read and I try and improve. So, but you know, I think it's important to create an atmosphere and culture of vulnerability with these kids, because this, right, prevents it from happening where you text and you hide behind a screen, or you're prevented from actually connecting with somebody. So I think the connection piece comes when you've shared experiences about, and everybody's going through something, everybody's got some stuff, and it's not always rainbows and butterflies. So I think when you create, you know, the environment and the safe space, I guess, so to speak, to like let your guard down in front of your boys, it just grows connection. But you have to facilitate it. It's a plant. You got to water it. And then as you water it, it grows and the bonds grow stronger.
You've had a month full of moments already. It's like an incredible February, 5 wins. St. John's, a Long Island team. I know that that's a big win for your program. Siena in overtime. You coached at Siena. You know the Capital Region really well. Mount St. Mary's is a good team. Monmouth in state, like that carries some weight, I would think. And then recently over Manhattan, 11-10. What are the moments that stand out thus far?
Yeah, I mean, they're all awesome. Again, for me, it's just the happiness and pride I feel for the boys and for the parents and for our alumni. You know, we brought the alumni. We had 6 or 7 of them out on Saturday. I brought them in the locker room. They were just kind of waiting, you know, there's kind of like an entry where you can't really go back, and I brought them back there. I don't know if they've ever felt that before. So I've been very fortunate to be a part of a lot of winning teams and winning programs and some great moments throughout my career. But this is unique in that you're experiencing it with a group and a large group of people that have never felt it before. So, you know, not losing sight of that, is really important. You know, I was taxed after the Monmouth game that Wednesday night. And everybody's like, nobody slept Wednesday, nobody slept Thursday. You know, Saturday after the Manhattan game, I felt like I could coach another game. Like I was good. I reset. But the Monmouth game, you know, I think it was just we were just pushed. And the Siena game and those guys were relentless. And one of my best friends coaches over there and, you know, and Liam Gleason. And I just think there's, you know, they got championship pedigree. And I felt that championship pedigree from Manhattan because, you know, that game kind of flipped back where we'd always been crawling our way back, and Manhattan, it was like, we got up, they kept coming back. And then at the end, you know, I think it's the Dwight Eisenhower quote, like you're at the end of your rope, you tie a knot and you hang on. That's kind of what it felt like for us on Saturday. So there's been a lot of highs with the wins. And, you know, for me, it's cliche, but I don't measure the success in wins and losses. It's just, are we improving? Are we growing? Are we evolving? And, you know, I don't know what happened this week. We didn't have a single practice. And honestly, like I woke up this morning, I was pretty disappointed in myself that I didn't find a way to get the guys who weren't going in the game. I don't know that I got them better this week. I could have found a way to practice and, you know, give them some reps and give them, but we didn't. We were head down. So I woke up feeling pretty guilty this morning that I didn't develop our entire roster, and I'll acknowledge that with the team because that's my job, is to get everybody better. But yeah, there's been a lot of highs, and I'm excited for the boys, and I'm excited for the parents, for our alums, for our administration, who've never felt it before, to feel that. And now, you know, it's just about getting back to work. We're off yesterday. We're off today. As I just, again, the 3 games in 7 days, it's a bear. With that being said, like, you know, it's part of the gig.
I feel it doing 1 game in 7 days on a Sunday where you got to travel back from Chicago. Well, you guys got a team motto?
Yeah, I mean, last year for us, our motto was, you know, it was about command and respect. That was something that still, I think, lingers within our program. This year, my mindset was, I read this book and I say, don't install a book, but like pound the stone, like for me, is something that really I identify with and just getting up every day and you go to work. Like you pick up the hammer and you throw it. You know, we have another, you know, phrase that we use here, which is logs on the fire. The concept is that, you know, when you go out to practice, you're not starting your fire. You put so many logs on there that when you go out there, you just put your hands out there, you warm up, and you're ready to go. So there's a lot of, I think, phrases, you know, words on the wall, which don't mean anything unless you breathe life into them and let the boys resonate with them. So I think that command respect thing, I think it still resonates within our group. Pound the stone is, you know, the work ethic that I believe in, which is for me, you know, what I was raised, my family, my parents, my wife and her parents. And, you know, obviously under Coach Breck and Coach Marr and all the people that I've worked for, just teaching you what hard work looks like. So I think there's a lot that goes into the culture aspect of it. But at the end of the day, the words on the wall don't mean anything unless there's buy-in and belief.
Florida State football with Mike Norvell, break the rock. Rutgers.
Yeah, same concept.
Coach Schiano, keep chopping. Yep. Serious question. What's a Highlander?
That's a good question. You know, we have our mascot here, runs around with the sword and all that stuff. You know, I don't get too caught up in the branding logo aspect of it. You know, I know what a Highlander is and what it means for our boys. And it's hard work, man. It's hard work. It's putting in the time, like you said, pounding the stone. But, you know, hopefully it means a little something different than it has in the past in terms of what this is, you know, becoming.
You were a Bruin, Baldwin Bruins.
Damn
correct?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Lindbrook Baldwin.
We took care of Lindbrook a couple of times. That's no problem.
Yeah, my first high school game was my freshman year. The starting goalie, I was in ninth grade. The starting goalie got hurt against Hempstead. We played Baldwin 2 days later, and it's my first start against John Canaris. But so Baldwin, was that Coach Casper?
So I was a sophomore going up and down JV and varsity. Coach Casper's last year, and then my coach, you know, Rich Gargiulo, got his first year in my junior year. So we had a pretty talented group, but, you know, we were the same year as Danowski's boys over at Farmingdale. Those guys were just on another level when we were in high school. But, yeah, Baldwin High School, always rep it, take a ton of pride in being from Baldwin. And we certainly, you know, made some pit stops in Lindbrook at the White Castle. But, you know, will always be a huge part of me.
Today's episode is brought to you in partnership with Spire Lacrosse. Spire's world-class high school and post-grad lacrosse programs are ideal for serious lacrosse players looking for an intense training environment to prepare for the next level of competition. The academies provide student-athletes the chance to study, train, and compete in world-class athletic and academic facilities while seeking the best possible college scholarship opportunities.
I think I ate six of those in one sitting one time. Albany, you got out of Albany in 2007. You were part of the rise of the program as a player.
Yep.
What was that like? What lessons have you learned? What impact did that have on you now as a leader?
Yeah, it was huge. You know, for me, you know, you get chills thinking about, you know, my team and, you know, obviously what we built there. Coming from Baldwin, where we never quite got over the hump and won a county championship, to walking into Albany where they had won a championship, but you looked around and like, this is what we do. And that, you know, rubs off on you when there is an expectation to win. You know, for me, the biggest impact, obviously my teammates and my friends and my best friends, you know, it's just playing under Coach Marr and learning under him, and how to create. And obviously I know you guys know each other very well. But just the vibe that he put out for us and learning how to play free and, you know, not, you know, freaking out over every little thing when it doesn't go your way. So, and again, Scotty had a lot of, you know, evolving and changing. He probably coached us a little bit different than before Lyle and those guys came through. He's probably a little bit harder on us in terms of, like, you know, just being a little bit more of probably a hammer in the early years, and then, you know, probably evolving a little bit, you know, as the years went on. But it was incredible for me, and it all starts and ends with Coach Ma. I know for me, you know, second father for me, you know, and influence on me and my life and my career. He gave me a shot, you know, three times in my adult life, you know, as a punk, you know, 18-year-old kid coming out of Baldwin, which I was. And then as a 22-year-old director of ops, getting my start right after college. And then again, coming back after my years at Siena under Coach Breck. So I'm completely indebted to Coach Marr and the influence that he's had on me in my life.
Yes, Scott, for the listeners who don't know, Scott and I were teammates and classmates at Johns Hopkins. We had a small class of, I think, six of us, but Scott was an incredible teammate. He was really good player, had more than like 25 assists when he was a sophomore, but he would stay after practice if I asked him or if he asked me, and we would just shoot and work on things and talk about the game and talk about shooter's options coming off the dodge. He was a good feeder from the left side, and we spent a lot of time away from practice, you know, working on our craft, and he was a very supportive teammate. I will say that. So I want to know what it was like when you took that, you were the OC at Albany when Lyle and Miles Thompson were in their heyday. What was that like? What was notable about that experience?
Yeah, it's definitely over my coaching career been the number one question that I've been asked. Like, what was it like? I've had the same answer. I've learned more from them in my experience coaching them than they ever learned from me. It's not even comparable. It's not close. I learned that there was a different way to do things. Very much so. And certainly at Siena, and you ask any of my Siena guys, like I was like this, stick to the outside, roll away, right, left. Like I was that guy. That's the way that I was brought up.
Textbook coaching out of the textbook.
Yeah. And again, being from the island, like that's what you learn. Yeah. That's what you grow. And then, you know, when I got to Albany, I was like, all right, doing this, that this is not going to work with these boys. So probably a little bit of a struggle for me. I'm sure Coach Marl will tell you a couple of times he had to sit me down and be like, "Hey, you gotta relax a little bit. You gotta probably a little bit more positive, as opposed to like this." Cause I was like this. And again, I wore it as an Albany guy. Like I wore it to bed. I woke up in the morning with, I just felt, I don't know, it was a burden, but a duty to my alumni, to get this thing going. And I wore that a lot. So I think for me, you know, learning how to just lighten up, let go a little bit, which at times for me is just proven to be a struggle sometimes. And that's why I don't coach the offense anymore, because I'm probably just wound up too tight. But, you know, coaching Lyle, Miles, Ty, and all those guys that we had on the team, that there's just a different way of doing this. And that started with those guys and their ability and their skill level, which obviously helped raise everybody up. And then Scotty adapting his style to those guys and what would work for them. That's probably the biggest thing that I learned in terms of creating an environment. You have to connect with people and you have to create an environment where kids aren't afraid to go for it, to make a mistake. And then how you react on the sideline to those mistakes, it filters into the team and that filters into the guys on the field, because it's all energy, based and connected. So I learned a ton. I'm still trying to do better in terms of just, being, I would think, less just intense, but still keeping my energy and my focus while managing. I talk about it all the time. It's about response as opposed to reactions. And certainly in the early part of my career, I was definitely more of a reactor than a responder.
Some players need structure. Some players don't want structure. And I guess you have to find the common ground.
Yep.
Like, how do you treat a turnover? And who made the turnover? Why did they make the turnover? What's your reaction to the turnover? Like, those are, when you're coaching an offense, those seem like little things, but they become your the flow and the attitude of your O. So it sounds like you had to kind of give up a little.
Oh, yeah.
To get more.
100%. That is for me in terms of like what I learned was learning how to live with a lot of those things and biting my tongue and, probably losing some hairs off the top a little bit there along the way. But, it's the biggest thing for our guys here at NJIT was that there was a visceral, like when they made a mistake, anger. We had a lot of this, we had a lot of like, and you would waste your time mentally and emotionally thinking about what just happened as opposed to responding and just going to fight for the ball, because that's at the end of the day, that's what inspires your teammates. And I tried to tell the boys, like, that's your job when you're on the field, is to inspire the guys that are on the sideline. And you're not going to inspire them by being pissed about making a mistake. We play an imperfect game and mistakes are going to happen. And if we want to play fast, and which is what we want, and we're going to get, I'm going to get angry over every mistake that happens on the field. It's going to be a tough recipe. So there are things that we live with and there are things that we don't accept. And we just have to make it very clear to our guys, these are the expectations. These are the rules or guidelines. You can bend them, but there's a couple things you can't break. So I think if you're clear with your expectations with the boys, then, you're going to be able to learn and grow. And that's also being consistent on Mondays and Tuesdays after film, that you're not screaming at them, for the stuff that you're being process driven. And then you go in there and you scream about the results, then you're full of it and no one's going to get behind your message.
I always looked at it like whitewater rafting, or I used to tube in the Catskills. And if you complained or worried or made a mistake on a set of rapids and wasted too much time on those rapids that you just crossed, then you got engulfed by the next set of rapids. So it's a next play mentality. we can come back to that later and talk about what happened. But I think too often people, they lose their shit based on stuff that just went down instead of, as you said, chase the ball down.
Yep. And I, for me, it's what we talk about all the time. It's playing with emotion as opposed to playing emotionally. And that's really hard because you put so much time into this and you're so invested and you want to do well. And then when you don't, what happens for you? And in those moments, that's what I say to our guys, like, you know, if you can't mentally and physically and emotionally handle it in practice, how can you expect us to put you into a game when people are really trying to be physical and not hurt you, but like you're all fighting for the same thing. So the response as opposed to the reaction thing, I think is something that we really push and hopefully resonates with our guys. And it's a challenge every game. I remember like Manhattan went on the run. I was like, dink, dink, dink. And I'm on the sideline. I'm saying level, level. We're good. We're good. We're good. Because if I'm not, then they're not. And then we don't get the results that we want. So it's all connected.
You were the head coach at LIU during their transition, correct?
Yes, sir.
On the island. What would you take away from that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I remember getting the call, you know, from my athletic director at the time, Deputy Jung. I think it was like 9 o'clock at night. And she's like, I need you in a suit in my office, like 6:30 tomorrow morning. You're going to the city. I'm like, all right, well, I don't think I'm getting fired in a suit. So like, I'll be okay. And then I'd heard the rumors about them involved, you know, elevating to Division I. And I just didn't know when it was going to happen. So anyway, I went and they put me in the city. They announced it. And I was like, all right, here we go. Now I know like talent wise, we probably had a good like 15 to 18 guys who could play at the Division I level. But I knew we were going to take some lumps and it was going to take some work. So It was definitely a challenge. And for our guys, I remember that moment because like for us as a lacrosse team, it was incredible. There was no men's team in Brooklyn, but we combined two campuses. But, you know, I told our guys, like, I'm like, listen, this is great for us, but don't celebrate on other people's graves. Because when you go back to when I come back, like some people are never going to play here again because you're combining two campuses and two athletic programs. Some kids are not going to be here. So it was exciting for us as a program, but also like mentally and emotionally a little bit draining because of, you know, a lot of kids and a lot of coaches were potentially going to be, you know, having major life changes. So zooming out as a group, like our guys, like we just, it was very similar to our first year at LIU in Division I to what we had last year, like evolve, grow, like we need to focus on the long term. And then, right, COVID hit the next year, which was obviously awful. But on the bright side, it was really good because we got to bring back a bunch of fifth year guys for that extra year. And then we closed the gap. You know, we got Will Mark and we got Richie and, you know, Blake.
Connor Farrell.
What's it? Yeah. Connor. Connor as well. And, you know, it was challenging in that, like, we were growing from like here, how do we get from here to here? And now how do we get from here to here? And we got some pretty good talent, you know, with Chris Campbell, like I said, with Richie, with Blake, Will Mark, and then a ton of other guys that we got good pretty quick, you know, and then we got competitive. So it was, it definitely prepared me for this challenge. But, you know, I thought we did a pretty good job of, you know, getting high level character kids. And obviously we lived on the edge. You know, I think at the U for sure. And those guys still do. And I love them. I still stay in touch with a lot of those guys. And I know Jordy's over there now, still there with Troy, and they're going to do a great job. And one of our former guys, Henry Flacco, is on staff there too. So I follow him, you know, I want him to do well. And obviously miss a lot of those guys.
Did you find Will Mark in California?
Yeah, so I give a lot of credit to. So the way finding Will was when the elevation happened, D2 to D1, and no disrespect to the other guys we had on the roster, the goalies, but I remember I told my staff, I said, stop all recruiting. Don't recruit an attackman, a defender, a faceoff guy, a defender. The only thing we're doing until we find the guy is recruiting a goalie. So we had all of our coaches only recruiting a goalie because having, you know, whether it was Blaze Reardon, you know, J.D. Colarusso, Brett Queener, Rob Shaw at Harvard, Tom Moore, Brent Harps. Like, I've been around some incredible goalies. And if you don't have that dude in the back of the net, you got a problem. So our assistant at the time, Brendan Schroeder, I think he had a buddy at Vermont. And for whatever happened, it fell through for Will, who was verbal to Vermont. And I knew about Will from Maverick Showtime. And then Brendan brought his name up. I'm like, yeah, yeah. So I literally hopped on the phone and I just put everything we had towards getting him. You know, I knew he was good. Did I know he was going to be, well, I think he's arguably one of the best goalies in the, yeah, in the country, but did I know he was going to be that good? I mean, you never know, but I felt pretty good about Will, you know, as soon as Brendan ran his said his name, I was like, yeah, let's go. So we got him on campus, gave him everything we had, and you know, I was texting Will the other day. I'm just so happy for him and so proud of him to be playing at that level, and try and watch every one of his games that I can.
What's March look like? You guys start America East play, I guess, later in the month. The league's going to be pretty strong this year.
We got Wagner this week, Lindenwood, and then we open up spring break at Vermont with America East play. So we're back to at Vermont. Yep, that'll be a bear for sure. I mean, the conference, you know, it is just so competitive from top to bottom.
Yeah, I watched that Brian Harvard game the other day. I was really impressed with Brian. I mean, they lost out of that game, but wow, that game was a taxing game. I got to see UMBC scrimmage Hopkins in late January. I thought they were improved also. I know Scott, Coach Marr up at Albany likes his team this year. So the league looks like it's pretty strong. I mean, Brian to me would be the front runner, but the league looks strong. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I certainly think, you know, the champion and Brian is at the top. I don't think there's any arguing that. Until somebody knocks him off. And I know they got, I think, 24 seniors over there, and Coach Ross is doing a tremendous job with those guys. But yeah, the league is super competitive top to bottom all the way. You know, every single team that you have in the league has tremendous coaches. And I do think we all have relatively good relationship, which is, you know, nice. You never know on a year-to-year basis. And certainly the Albany game for us is always going to be laced with emotions. But, you know, It's a great league and super competitive, and that for us is the goal, is to make it into the playoffs and compete for a championship.
Last thing, who are you guys in your team? You got Arthur Miller, the playwright. He's your leading scorer.
Yeah, so Artie, you know, our Canadian, he's behind the cage. He broke his hand last year, so we lost him after about three games. So getting him back is huge. Garrett Muscatella on attack, and Jack Bowie and Artie are playing on the same, you know, summer team out there out west and for the Victoria Shamrocks. And, you know, Muskie is, I call him a slim reaper. Like, he's not going to, like, wow you in terms of just looking at him, but he just does everything really well. And, you know, Billy Kroger's been great for us at the X, and we got Isaac Van Zomer, who's coming back from an injury, should be back really day to day. And then defensively, Teddy Grimley, Hank Bethel coming in, obviously, is a game changer for us. Chucky Robbins, Liam in net. And then this game, we actually went nine middies deep on the offensive end. So
wow.
We had our first midfield, who's been, you know, Jesse Roth, Owen Corey, and Ryan Saninsky, Jesse transferring in from Bellarmine. And then our second line with Logan Hohen, Brandon Wazatowski, two seniors, and Ben Roberts transferred in from Lowell. And then that third line we ran in the Manhattan game was all freshmen. And I know one of our guys, Mike Reckberg, had 1-1. Aiden Culver scored his first goal, and Gabe Thompson is on man up for us. So we felt pretty good about just, you know, the depth that we have. And we ran six defensive midfielders and three LSMs in the Manhattan game as well. So we feel, you know, pretty good about the depth that we have. And we're just trying to, you know, stay healthy, knock on wood, as best we can.
That's important when you play three games in 7 days to get some guys a little lower on the totem pole quality reps. And that sounds like it was real positive.
Yeah, we talked about that as a staff going into this week. Like, we knew we had the three games in 7 days, and like, we got to go deeper. And those guys deserve it. They're all, like, we felt pretty good about those guys. But you never know. And they went in there and, you know, they score their first goal, they make a play, and you're like, oh, all right. Like, but you believe in them, but they don't really know until they're in those moments. And again, they're going to turn it over, they're going to make mistakes, but that was a concerted effort by our staff. We said we had to go deeper into our bench, and we felt good about that, and a testament to our staff and the experience that they have.
They are what you tell them they are, and they will become what you think they can be.
No doubt. And that's part of it too, is, you know, I've said it before, like, arrogance and confidence is a fine line to walk, but any good team that I've been a part of, you walk that line. So for me, I'll err on the side of arrogance as opposed to humility. And we'll figure the rest out down the road. But again, I'm not, like, to me, it's different. You know, when you're confident, you've done the work and you've prepared and you've done the right. And I don't believe in it. And you see too much, I'm not going to get in a soapbox, but there's a lot too much of this before the game. I'm not a big fan of it. And I think you see a lot of it. And I tell our guys, like, we're not talking. Like, that bell is going to ring, you know, and then they're going to have to answer. They're going to have to answer that bell. So for us, you know, just keeping your mouth shut and doing your job, and, you know, all that talk, and games are not won in the pregame. They're not. So any of those teams that talk, that's their prerogative, and more power to them, but we're not about it. And that's part of, you know, from Coach Mars' influence on me, like, there's a way to play the game. And there's a little kid, and there were a bunch of little kids who came out to see us, and it might be the first and last time that they see us. Let's make sure we're doing it the right way.
New Jersey Institute of Technology, 5-0, the Highlanders. Terrific February. Eric Wolf's been our guest. Coach, thank you so much. Learned a lot about the program. Congratulations, continued success. To me, it's awesome that we get to talk about a program like yours, and couldn't be happier. Thanks for making the time today, and continued good luck.
Gwynn, thanks so much for having us. Appreciate the platform, and as always, go Baldwin every day of the week.
Thank you for tuning into today's show. You can contact me at quint.kesnick@espn.com with any feedback or guest ideas. And a special thank you to all our sponsors, including today's presenting sponsor, Spire Lacrosse.